Got it. All righty, here we go. Write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Text as well. Come in into the state roofing text line at 98973. Do love to hear from you. JT just wrote me. Jimmy just wrote me. By the way, I'm Tom. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the hangover from the trail mix yesterday. I'm going to have a big party out here. Decided big party. And I was thinking I'm going to run it by Jacob. He's going to be like, nah, don't do that. Run it by him right now on the air. Invite all the listeners. What do you think about that idea?
To Cleellum.
Yeah. No. We don't call it Cleellum anymore. Clee. Jacob, what do we call it? What do the kids call it now?
You're trying to get it started. You want people to call it the Clee?
The Clee.
Come on,
John, all
Clee.
Of your fans will overrun Clee in a heartbeat.
Tom, it's the Clee.
The Clee.
The Clee.
Diving okay. In. Jacob, I heard the laughter. Don't mock. I was talking while I went into the water. I heard the mocking in your voice, Jacob. It's the Clee. An episode that's starting now.
I think it's a great yes. Nickname. I do think you might struggle to get the other residents of the town to pick it up. Is my concern. What does Dougie think of it? Have you tested on him yet?
I haven't ran it by him. Okay. He's out. I was supposed to see him today at the watering hole, but he's getting the second shot for his coronavirus thing. So that's where. By the way, that brings us right into the next topic.
Perfect.
But I should say this: since I am on the Clee Beautification Committee, it will be a suggestion that I will make. I'm sure I'll get plenty of support. All right, let's see. J&J COVID-19 vaccine is safe and effective, the FDA says. Paving the way for the new approval. Good for you guys there at J&J, the two brothers, Johnson & Johnson. On top of it, this one does not need to be stored at like 500,000 degrees below zero, Tom. Is that correct?
That's right. That's why there's so much hope for this. This one is a single dose shot, which is not what the other two that have already been approved get. And it needs no, you know, serious refrigeration. I think it would fit just in your regular old refrigerator. It's just a regular storage kind of setup. So there's high hopes for this. Now, I think most of us, though, when we hear this stat saying, oh, wow, this is great. These are, you know, the third effective form. Then you only hear it's 66.1% effective in preventing moderate to severe. You go, wow, that's like 20-30% off the others. But they say, no, those others are really high, but we don't expect anything to be that high normally. So 66, that's fine. And, you know, I trust the doctor. So if they tell me it's fine, I guess I'll go for it. But I think another thing
is it less money? Is it cheaper?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a single dose, so it should be cheaper than paying for two doses at least.
It should be, right? But it's a single dose, but it's like 500 cc's. It takes them 20 minutes to put it in you. You know what's really interesting is more good news comes out about the vaccines. You see stocks like Amazon crashing down. You see Zoom diving back down into the ground because people go, well, I guess we're going back. So don't expect those stocks to be growing at all. So I'll sell out on Zoom. I'll sell out on Amazon. I'll get out of
Are you exaggerating, though?
Well, what the hell? I'm doing talk radio. What do you want?
I mean, I can't imagine that Amazon is about to bottom out.
No. You're not bottom out. No. But you want to, like, for instance, in 1 month, right?
Yeah.
It had a high above 30, about 34.50 was the high. It's now down to 32.06. And that is in 1 month. So what happened is as people start to realize are as many people going to be using Amazon for the DoorDash? You'll probably look at these other ones as well. Anything that's trading publicly, it's just the effect, right? The cause and effects. Things start to go well. Vaccines are changing things, moving things back to normal. People will be less likely to be doing business as they have previously online. There was
that
another
makes
interesting
sense.
Article. Yeah, doesn't it?
However,
yeah, sure.
I do think we've gotten in the habit. That's what's interesting about these, all these new forced habits that, you know, we had no option to avoid. I don't know if how many people now have gotten so used to having everything ordered, you know, through Amazon, for instance, or any kind of delivery that our return to normal won't be quite as normal, that I still think that Amazon's boom is going to be beneficial to Amazon for years.
Maybe people just taking a little something off the top right now on it. I'd seen an article in the Wall Street Journal. The UK will have, by the middle of this year, 56 million will have gotten the vaccine. But then they said it doesn't really matter because people will still continue to get sick from COVID, and that will be something that will continue to stay with us for quite some time. This is from the Wall Street Journal in the UK that
what kind
we'll just
of-
get used to it, that it just, yeah, that it'll still get people. And it'll still, you know, be a contributing factor to the death of the individuals. But it's something that we're just going to have to live with. He said, just like chickenpox, just like measles, just like these other things that are still around.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone's talking about the eradication of this. If it can get controlled, if we have vaccines, if we get like our annual flu shot, if that's what it takes. Yeah. I mean, people get shingles shots. People get all shots for all sorts of things. That may be, where things end up. So this is good news, though. This still is about a week or two away from final approval. And they don't right now. They only can promise about 20 million doses rather than 100 million doses of the other two companies. But they hope to ramp up by the end of this year. They'll be up in that territory as well.
Now, they'll make it. Will we get it? Seattle will be using University of Washington develop mapping tool to guide equitable vaccine distribution. The question is always, you get it, but then you set up a system and it becomes too complex, like in L.A. or in California. I saw that one guy had said, well, you know, I don't weigh enough. I have to be at a certain weight. How about I eat a box of donuts? Can that, if I put on a couple of more pounds, will that be enough to get me to the weight that's needed in order to get the vaccine? Or grocery store workers. Somebody calls up and says, well, I don't work at a grocery store. I work at a convenience store, and I still handle produce. And in effect, is that like a grocery store? So as the governor of Connecticut said, when you keep slicing the salami, it becomes more and more difficult. I don't know why he had salami mentioned, but I guess everybody gets salami when they get the vaccine. In Connecticut, they're just keeping it simple. If you're 65 or older, everybody gets the vaccine. Right, Tom?
Yeah, and Wall Street Journal is patting him on the back saying, yeah, that's great. You know, let's just keep it simple that more people, and I thought this is more people die in an age group like above 65 than they do for poverty or for racial disparities or anything else. And so that's a good way to go. Now, there's a possibility that there'll be inequity along those lines. In fact, one of the reasons why we dropped the limit from 75 initially to 70 in the state was they thought that a lot of the ethnic communities that are being hit the hardest, a lot of them, they don't live as long as the white population, say. And so that really ends up benefiting, the people that are not suffering as much. So what this UW mapping tool does, and it sounds like you may be object to this, but what they do is they use something called the Social Vulnerability Index. It's a federal measure. It takes 15 factors like poverty level, household size, vehicle size, to sort of map out where in the Puget Sound region are the illnesses, the diseases hitting the hardest. And it turns out, like we've been reporting for a year now, South Seattle and South King County has been hit the hardest. And so they're going to use that to direct whatever city funds and or county funds we have for the vaccines. And most of that is being distributed at the state level, not the city level. But whatever funds they have, they're going to try to direct it to the people that are being hurt the most. And I think that seems, quite effective.
If you're more vulnerable to it, then you get the vaccine sooner. I don't like the idea that you want to be able to get it into wherever the people are gathering. If they're going to churches, you have it. I think there's a couple of different organizations that go to churches, and on a Sunday you line up and you get the vaccine. It shouldn't be that hard to get these vaccines to the people that need them. You know, when you start saying, well, it's not fair, the 70-year-old white woman is going to live longer anyway because she's in better health, so therefore she does not need the vaccine, but the 63-year-old black man that smokes two packs of cigarettes a day, he should be getting the vaccine. Well, what about life choices? Is that also considered into this thing? You don't want to do that. You don't want to slice these things up like that. As the governor of Connecticut said, slicing the salami or whatever it was. The important thing is, if you're, I like 65 or older, everybody. And it's all about getting it to the neighborhoods, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that it? It's getting it into the neighborhoods
now
and being able to just distribute it as quickly as possible to everybody.
This is, now we have to make a distinction though. What we're talking about with this social mapping guide, this is supplemental. The city is, this is what the city is doing to try to sort of make up for the inequities that are happening sort of at the state level, the distribution. If it turns out that South King County is being hit the hardest, they have the highest number of hospitalizations and the highest number of deaths, and they get no more than, say, in North Seattle, like where I live, then the city can come in and say, you know what, we're going to do our pop-up in South Seattle or South King County rather than in North. That's all they're doing. This is not the main supply of vaccines. That's the thing that happens at the state level, and that's where your Connecticut governor comes in. And you could say Jay Inslee did something very similar in that he said, okay, it's 65, anybody 65 and up. We're not looking at anything else other than age at this point. I think the difference might be that I don't even know if they got the healthcare workers in Connecticut first, but it's now at an age thing. And I do think California served its purpose. It tried to be too technical and it ended up kind of bottlenecking things. And so, yeah, if you just go by age, if age really is the highest indicator, more than any other factor, more than income or, you know, health or, you know, geography, then that's the cleanest way to do it, I think. Makes sense.
Because if you try to split it all up, it's going to get too messy. This is the story we've covered of Kevin Mather, who was the head of the Mariners. Was he the president of the Mariners, Tom?
CEO.
And CEO. He had been in there for a number of years. He'd worked his way up from 93 or 94. And then there he was, I think, in 2017. He took over as the CEO. He's speaking to a small group of people at a Bellevue Rotary breakfast, I believe. He does it over Zoom. And he's just sort of casual, sort of bar fly kind of locker room conversations, you know, probably revealing more than he should as a public person speaking in a public event. How did people find out about this thing, Tom?
This is the craziest story. So this happened on February 5th, spoke for the Bellevue Rotary, and the Rotary, like almost 2 weeks later, just went ahead and posted it. This one guy, he's a 36-year-old web developer. I love the fact that he's this big a Mariners fan. His favorite thing is favorite video game is MLB The Show that he plays on his PlayStation. And one night after it had been posted, and literally no one had looked at it for a good 24 hours, he listens to a Mariners podcast. When that's over, he just happens randomly to tune to YouTube and types in Mariners just to see if there's anything new on the Mariners on YouTube. And this 46-minute video comes up of Kevin Mather, this is the CEO. And he's now watching it. He has, I think, 221 followers on his Twitter account. So he's not hugely popular, but he has enough of a, and mostly they're mostly Mariners fans. He just randomly clicks on this late one night and starts watching it, and about 10 to 11 minutes into his listening goes, oh my God, this guy is so candid. This guy is so frank. This is crazy. And so he sends out just a tweet that says, wow, you guys, again, 211 followers, and who knows how many people even saw this at this point. Get a load. You guys ought to check out this. And he sends out this link. You ought to check this out, man. Here's the CEO of the Mariners being so blunt and honest about everything, you know, about 10 minutes into the video. And he sends it out, and then he just watches the rest of it. And he says, and the more and more he listens to it, he begins thinking, oh my God, this is getting, as he puts it, dark and darker. And wait, and at that point he's thinking, oh my God, I wonder, what have I done? And then, you know, sure enough, the following morning somebody saw his tweet, picked it up, and started watching it, and it started going around in social media circles, hey, check this out. And so somebody finally published it, officially, I don't know if it was Seattle Times or something, and they gave this guy credit. He says, listen, Eric Hess found this, you know, this video, and now all the world's a Twitter, shall we say.
Yeah. I don't know. Dark, his words to describe it as dark, I don't know if it was necessarily dark what Kevin was talking about. How many people were online at that Bellevue Rotary breakfast? I don't know.
I think there were about 30 people listening live at the time.
So you can get like 100, maybe 100 or 80 at one of those breakfasts over there in Bellevue on a normal Tuesday. I think that's when they do these things. I spoke there a couple of times. So 30 people are there. They all listened. They all watched. They saw it live firsthand.
Yeah.
They go and home not and a peep. Tweeted out, or were they shocked or anything by it, or they just sort of
No. It was not deemed as news, especially. Yeah. It wasn't until this random fan, and now he's sort of wondering, he says he thinks it's pretty cool that fans can have this kind of impact on the game, but he's just wondering, you know, what he had unleashed. So he's sort of torn, but you just see how random and accidental this whole you know, story was.
It's like the cow kicking over the glue pot.
My father was silent most of the time.
That's right. That's Bruce Springsteen.
He was not communicative. I grew up thinking, you know, my father was like ashamed of his family. That was my entire picture of masculinity. Did you have to deal with that?
So my father leaves when I'm two.
Oh, wow. So it's Bruce Springsteen and Barack Obama, two big blowhards in the same show.
And I don't meet him until I'm 10 years old when he comes to visit for a month. I had no way to connect to the guy. You know, the guy's, he's a stranger who's suddenly in our house.
On the surface, Bruce and I don't have a lot in common. He's a white guy from a small town in Jersey. I'm a black guy of mixed race, born in Hawaii. He's a rock and roll icon. I'm not as cool.
Not as cool?
That's right.
Hey, I like how he starts right out with the color of the
sun. I was trying to remember the first time we actually met. Probably was in 2008 during the campaign. You came, was it in Michigan or Ohio?
I have no recall.
In our own ways, Bruce and I have been on parallel journeys, looking for a way to connect our own individual searches for meaning, truth, and community with the larger story of America. And over the course of a few days, all just a few miles from where he grew up, we talked.
It made sense. If you're going to be a rock and roll star, you're going to play the guitar.
Guitars were cheap. I could actually work a job, which I did. And I saved up $18, bought a cheap guitar. Then I started to learn some Beatles stuff. I learned Twist and Shout.
Did your folks say anything?
Keep it down!
All righty.
That's an abrupt cut.
I stopped it. It's another a podcast. This one is produced by Netflix or produced by the
Spotify.
Barack Obama.
Spotify's
production company.
Yes.
And it's on Spotify, yeah.
And Spotify, they say, this is part of their campaign to sort of take over the world of a podcast. They were the ones, they just signed Joe Rogan. They were the ones behind Michelle Obama's podcast, which was the number one global podcast. At the time, you are, I don't think you could be any more disinterested in either of those two gentlemen, but they have huge followings. It'll be interesting to see if the mix of followings, if there's a melding or not, if this is more Bruce's, you know, gig or, you know, the president, the former president's.
Well, what they found out is that people that listen to podcasts tend to be 30 and younger. They need to get older people. So they thought, let's find who, Bruce is 70. And Barack Obama is ageless. So let's get those two together, and then we can get, you know, the people listening to podcasts that are 55 to 60 years old that want to hear from these two blowhards. Oh, God. Avoid that one like the plague.
Wow. I'm not as big a Springsteen fan as maybe I should be.
Why is there a sense of obligation, Tom? He even says in his biography, I made all those things up. I never lived those lives. I made these things up. I thought it all up on my own. I wasn't part of that. Okay, I came up with it on my own.
So, John, so the way I say should be is that people recognize certain people as giants in the field. I feel the same way about Prince. I understand that Prince was huge. But I personally never really got into it, and I think that's on me. My hunch is maybe when I retire, I'll be able to spend some time and really get into Springsteen or Prince or, you know, all of these giants in a field that I haven't had time to really explore.
The Billy right over top of Bruce right there.
I got nervous that Bruce was my new song, and I gotta tell you, maybe I'm not an American. I'm not a big Bruce fan.
Wow.
Yeah!
Yeah.
Bruce.
But I'm a Billy
fan. Big band, the E Street Band.
Yeah.
Good for you, Rich. Oh, by the way, Rich, you're not here yet. Muckleshoot Casino. Oh. Proud to bring you the biggest and the best in Northwest. See them on stage for one night only. Bruce Springsteen and Rachel Bell. Yeah.
I'm going to wear the jeans and I'm going to wear the T-shirt and the American flag. All that Brucey stuff. It's a Brucey thing, right? Call him Brucey?
No.
Gary Bruce?
Hey. No. Very Brucey of you. You have brought some fun stories today, my friend. Why don't you snap open that little backpack that you carry around, that teeny tiny, like, super-duper high-fashion backpack that gals were carrying in the, you know, like 4 years ago. What do you got there?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's my backpack of fun. All right, so this story comes from the Wall Street Journal, and this is a me and Tom story, okay? So just do your own thing for a little bit. This is a story for me and Tom. That's for the adults.
Okay.
So it's called, Is It Time to Kill the Book Blurb? So everybody knows this. When you flip over a new book and it says, dazzling, a masterwork, life-changing, unputdownable, which isn't even a word, all of this fawning. And it turns out that people in the book publishing industry and a lot of writers are not into it. They think it is fake and they think it is silly. And I was interested to know where this started. So in 1855, when Leaves of Grass came out, Walt Whitman was basically unknown at this point. And somehow Ralph Waldo Emerson had gotten a hold of Leaves of Grass and sent him a little letter. And the letter was so nice that Whitman's publisher said, okay, we got to put some of this letter on the book. And so they picked a line that said, I greet you at the beginning of a great career, R.W. Emerson. And they embossed it on the book's spine in gold letters. And so that's where the tradition started from. But not that long after that, well, I guess it was several years, 1936, George Orwell claimed that, quote, God, he was in a bad mood this day, the disgusting tripe that is written by the blurb reviewers, novels are being shot at you at the rate of 15 a day, and every one of them is unforgettable masterpiece, which will imperil your soul by missing. It's like, okay, dude, it's just a blurb. Anyway, apparently people still don't like the blurbs, like I said. But the interesting thing is, this study that was done in 2013 in the UK said that 40% of the people they surveyed actually do make a decision to buy the book based on those blurbs on the back. And I have to say that I'm included in this. I think that this story is one that is a rant from people on the inside of the publishing industry. For example, this week I took a book from the little free library and I flipped it over, and two of the three blurbs were from authors that I love. There was two books that I really, really loved. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't have taken that book if it wasn't for those blurbs, because I'd never heard of this author and I didn't know if I would have taken the risk on starting to read it otherwise.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised that they're so anti-blurb. It's not what they say. It's who's saying it. If I, you know, Thomas Pynchon is this great postmodernist American writer, and he's like a recluse. And when he, on the occasional blurbs from Thomas Pynchon, it's like, holy smokes, this Thomas Pynchon even likes this guy, that or this woman. That's a reason for me to take a second look at it. I don't understand. I understand this idea that everything is like every movie that's ever made, they come up with the best movie of the year, and nobody believes that. But if you can believe who's talking, you figure, well, I like Thomas Pynchon. If Thomas Pynchon likes this book, then maybe there's a chance I'll like it. It's not what is said, it's who is saying it. And I think that is important.
And by the way,
well,
Rachel,
Tom,
hold on, Rachel. I know you wanted me to sit this segment out.
Yeah,
Jacob,
please.
Who sent
you listen
this story?
To me for once?
Yes, I sent this story to Jacob for you.
Oh.
I read
oh.
the story.
Oh, my God.
I see the blurbs. I don't pay much attention because I don't buy the books, but you do. They blurb everything. You blurb movies. You blurb everything. You know, best movie I've ever seen, or best this, or best movie, best. And you see the thing on there, and you always think, well, if that guy liked it, then I'll like it. Now, are we finding out that the person that gave the quote on the thing didn't really like it, or felt some sort of obligation? Who was it in the article said that they do a whole bunch of these things, Tom? Wasn't there somebody in there that is constantly being asked
Stephen
to blurb?
Well, it was Stephen King.
That's
Stephen
it.
King. Yep. Well, there was a lot of people that are asked, but Stephen King says that he will only do this for new emerging writers, because otherwise he'd be doing it for everybody. There was a few people said that. They said, okay, I'll do it for a new writer, or I'll do it for someone who's from a marginalized community who might not get the attention they deserve. But I think part of the problem was they were saying not everybody reads the whole book and they write something. But you know what I love after doing this story? I love the word blurb. Like the way it comes out, blurb, blurb. Like if anyone ever asked me to do a blurb, you want to know what my blurb would be? Blurb. I'll just write blurb on the back of the book, maybe four times. Oh, I love it so much. It's so fun. Everyone, if you're listening out there in your cars, just say it to yourself. Blurb.
And if it was a, if it said blurb from Rachel Bell, I'd buy that book. That's the key.
See?
It's not what you say, it's who says it.
Tom, yeah, and not everyone knows this, but the B in blurb stands for Bell. It's an acronym.
Oh. Did you guys either have to do this? You come out of a movie and they ask you for a review or a line. Did you do that, Tom? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you probably never did that, did you?
Well, no. The thing is that it's like a movie isn't blurb worthy if you can say it blurbing it out. I want to think about, you know, my precise. I wouldn't mind doing a blurb for a movie, but I want to have it precisely thought out and written.
As
you
walk out of the theater, if you're a critic, the lady stands there with the clipboard. She goes, can I get a comment from you?
Yeah.
Well, that's why all of them are like, magnificent, because nobody can think of anything clever right in the moment.
Actually, we're sort of obligated now to do what you think. And so sometimes I just shrug my shoulders. Sometimes I think, you know, overrated or something. But, yeah, you try to come up with one little word. It wouldn't be what I would want officially on a poster. But they do want to get just a gauge of are people liking this or not. And that's not that difficult, I suppose.
I gave my brother an opportunity to do that. We walked out of a movie. He came down to L.A. to see the movie with me. And the woman goes, can we get a quote? Can we get a quote? And my brother said, yeah, it was long, but at least it was boring.
Rude blurb.
Sorry. These auto service centers. Yeah. Come on. Look at all the people up on the floor. Put your hands together. The Glitzky Wedding. We're going to be dancing. We're going to be having fun. This kind of song they'd have it at one of those weddings, Tom, you know? Everybody up. Get on up on the floor. Physical therapists say working from home injuries are up, and here is how to deal with them. So this ties in with the lady that was working from home, and then she said that she went out for a walk because her boss told her to, and then she broke both of her elbows, right?
Yeah, but this is less traumatic. This is more internally, like sitting where you're sitting. Is your computer high enough? Are you sitting on a couch or a bed when you're working? More people have neck injuries and shoulder injuries and back pains, not accidents. Like that poor lady yesterday, she broke both her elbows. But this is more kind of that constant, you know, strain. Do we have any sound to play with this? Or?
It says we do, but I don't. I think Jacob's too busy doing something else because I can't find it.
Okay, because I think this is part of Jesse Jones.
Commuting to work is one kind of pain. Sorry, working from home can create another.
I have two small kiddos, and I was unable to really play and wrestle around on the floor like I wanted to.
For North Bend's Matt Childs, it's his back.
I could do it. I would just hurt a lot.
So I use
viewers sent us their homework areas where they're crammed into corners.
We're kind of running short on time, so I'm just going to skip over to where he offers some advice.
Sorry about that.
Make sure that the screen is at eye level.
He also recommends a wireless keyboard and mouse, adjustable chairs, and an adjustable computer monitor. And for those whose only commute is to the kitchen table for the foreseeable future, physical therapist Amanda Sharon says there's an even cheaper solution, a timer.
So if you can invest that 5 minutes in yourself every half hour or so just to get up and move around, do some stretches, and move your body, it's really going to pay off and help you make it through the pandemic.
Did he mention anything about eating 2.5 pounds of trail mix?
No, but he quotes a guy who says the worst thing you can do is work from a bed or a couch. Bingo.
Oh, yeah. That's you, Tom.
That's right.
I sent Jacob a picture of my setup. What'd you do with that, Jacob?
We posted it to the Twitter page, actually. Yeah.
People like the fact that I have everything balancing on a log.
Log rolling computer, huh?
A little bit of that. All right. Thank you for that, Jesse. I feel better knowing that you're there fighting for me and my ergonomic chair.